Well, it's good to be with you all this morning. As we're about to finish our third month of having our liturgy online, it still feels surreal that we haven't been able to meet and see each other in person. You know, I'll stop by Vesper every now and then just to check on the building. And it still feels strange that our space hasn't been filled with our community in so long. You know, I miss the warm welcomes, the fist bumps and hugs, and seeing people and making faces with all the newborn babies who I'm guessing by now are maybe halfway through high school at this point. At least that's what it feels like. It seems like, you know, even though this pandemic and physical separation has interrupted our normal rhythms and expressions of welcome, it still is something that we all need. And so before we jump in, I want to give you a moment to reflect on what welcome means for you. You know, how does it feel to be welcomed? Or you can reflect on the flip side of that, which is just as important, but how does it feel not to be welcomed? So I'll give you a moment to reflect on that at home and offer any of your thoughts on the live chat. You know, feel free to continue offering your thoughts on the chat. But I'm sure it captures the full range of my own experiences and feelings of welcome as well. You know, when I am welcomed, I feel like I'm seen, I'm cared for, I belong. And when I'm not welcomed, I feel rejected or isolated or judged. You know, one of the more memorable times of welcome that I've experienced was when I was going through seminary. And I was doing it mostly online, but I would head up to Chicago for intensive classes on campus every summer and winter. And through a random connection, I met an older couple here in Austin when they happened to be visiting and found out that they lived near the campus in Chicago. And when they found out about my summer plans for classes, they gave me an open invitation just to hit them up if I needed a place to stay. And that's what I did the following summer. And they had a guest room all ready for me. They even took care of a couple meals for me. And after that first day, they handed me their house key, told me to keep it, and told me I could show up and live there anytime I needed in the next 3-4 years when I was taking classes. And I'm so grateful just for their beautiful expression of welcome. You know, how they welcomed me to Chicago, into their home. You know, it made me feel like I belonged, that I was part of their family. And that's what it feels like to be welcomed, right? There's a drawing in, there's being invited to belong, especially when you're starting from the outside. You know, this is what James Martin says about welcome and the example that Jesus modeled for us. He said, the movement for Jesus was always from the outside in. His message was always one of inclusion, communicated through speaking to people, healing them, and offering them what biblical scholars call table fellowship, that is, dining with them, a sign of welcome and acceptance in first century Palestine. In fact, Jesus was often criticized for this practice, but Jesus's movement was about inclusion. He was creating a sense of us. And that was Jesus's practice and value of welcome lived out here during his time on earth. It was a movement to bring people together and offer welcome in a tangible and practical way. And so the question I want us to consider this morning is, you know, what might a meaningful posture and practice of authentic welcome look like for us in this current season, especially as we attempt to navigate a world that's impacted by a pandemic and by racial injustice? You know, in the text for this morning, which is in Matthew 10, verses 40 through 42, Jesus paints a quick picture for his disciples of what welcome should mean and what it would look like in their context. And so we start in verse 40. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. And just for some context, What Jesus is saying here is part of a larger conversation that he's having with his disciples, where he's about to send them out for the very first time for them to start teaching others what he's been teaching them. And it's almost like sending them off to college, and he's giving them a pep talk of what to expect when they're now out there on their own. And he describes this interconnected relationship of welcome, where he's saying that in our welcome of others, it's actually a practice of welcoming God. Because how we welcome anyone is how we welcome everyone, including God. And so for us, we're reminded that our practice of welcome is more holistic than just the individual that we're extending welcome to. But welcoming others is simultaneously a practice of welcoming and encountering God as well. And so for all the Greenhouse kids that are joining us this morning, we're glad you're with us. I'm going to invite Autumn Barker and Fox to share some of their thoughts around welcome. So welcome, Autumn.
Good morning, Greenhouse. It's really nice to be with you all today. I have missed you the past several Sunday mornings, the past 3 months of several Sunday mornings. This week, I've been thinking a lot about the question, what does it mean to welcome each other? So I did what I usually do when I have a question, and I asked Google. And Google told me that welcome means an instance or manner of greeting someone. So does that mean welcome is just the way to say hello? Because it feels like maybe there's more to it than that, right? I figured I probably needed to ask a person about what welcome means instead of the internet. So I asked my son Fox what welcome has felt like for him, and he has given me permission to share. So let's hear what he has to say.
So Fox, I was wondering, when you think about what it feels like to be welcomed somewhere, what does that feel like for you?
It kind of makes me feel good and want to stay at that place more.
So do you feel like it's a place, or do you feel like it's a person, or sometimes does it feel like both for you?
Sometimes both.
Sometimes both. What are things that people can do that help you to feel welcome?
Oh, I'm just, if I'm visiting their house, right, the answer would be welcoming to me to their house.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are things that you feel like you can do to help people feel welcomed?
Whenever they come over for a visit, I can tell them welcome to my house.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
So for Fox, he feels welcome can come from people, but it's also in places where he feels really comfortable. So I also started to think about the different ways that I have felt welcomed in my life. I feel welcomed and accepted when my friend shares her home-cooked dinners with me, and when I watch movies with my sister in our PJs, and especially when my kids give me great big morning hugs when they wake up. Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me." So that sounds like welcoming each other can be even bigger than saying hello or inviting someone to your home. Maybe what Jesus is telling us is that when we welcome someone into our lives, we are also welcoming all the love that God put into that person. All the uniqueness and the differences in us show the time and care and thoughtfulness that God put into making each one of us just who we are, which is beautiful and so good. Really, welcoming each other is how we make a community. So maybe as an activity this week, you could brainstorm with your family different ways to help people around you feel welcomed. Maybe that's making a card for a neighbor and leaving it in their mailbox. Or, with your parents' permission, of course, leaving a really nice, loving sidewalk chalk message out in front of your house for everybody to see. Whatever that is, when we welcome and love each other just as we are, we become part of something so much bigger than just ourselves. We become part of the community that God intended for us. If we think about it, when you welcome a new friend, you're also giving that gift of welcome to their whole family. So I bet a lot of you have helped your friends, your parents, make a lot of new friends just by making friends yourself. I know I've become friends with a lot of your parents, which has made my life so much better and my heart so much bigger. So I want to thank you, Greenhouse Friends, for all the welcoming work you have brought to our Vox community.
Thank you, Autumn and Fox, for getting to hear about your own experiences around welcome. And as we practice welcoming others, we are invited to experience God in and through the way God has made each person that we interact with. And then we continue in verse 41. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And so here Jesus mentions a couple types of people to welcome. And when he mentions a prophet, those hearing this at the time would have understood what was behind that. Because prophets, you know, were people who would say things counter to the cultural norms. They would call things out and draw attention to blind spots in people and society. And so because of that, prophets weren't usually welcomed with open arms. Jesus himself said that a prophet is not welcome in their hometown. And he said this as people were kicking him out of his own hometown. And so if you're welcoming a prophet, you're welcoming controversy. You're welcoming disruption. You're welcoming what's uncomfortable. And for us, maybe our practice of authentic welcome is actually an invitation into discomfort. You know, if you remember, in that time and culture, hospitality was primarily practiced with strangers. You know, people who traveled, they relied on the welcome of complete strangers. People who hosted guests, they welcomed them in without knowing who they were and not expecting anything in return. And that's uncomfortable. You know, I know for me, my practice of welcome tends to be centered around comfort, where I feel like I can maintain a safe space for everyone. But if I'm honest, it's probably more about a safe space for myself. You know, I'll be more welcoming as long as it's comfortable for me. And maybe our goal in welcome isn't only to create safe and comfortable spaces, but maybe our reward in welcome, as Jesus says, actually comes from places of discomfort. There's a couple of women who started a movement called the People's Supper back in 2016. Jennifer Bailey and Lennon Flowers started this movement of 100 dinners in 100 nights. And they did this right after the 2016 election, when it was apparent that there was so much division and pain that was being brought to the surface because of people's politics and perspectives and worldviews. And so they envisioned people coming together to share a meal and have bridging and healing conversations. And so they hosted dinners with people that they knew in order to encourage belonging and healing. And they hosted dinners with people they didn't know in order to bridge political and ideological and identity differences. And what these suppers embodied wasn't comfortable or even safe space, but it's what they described as brave space. This is how Jennifer Bailey describes it. She says, brave space recognizes that there is no such thing as safe spaces in our communities. We all have the potential to hurt others and be hurt ourselves. If we are to move forward toward a more loving vision of what we can be, we must do it together. It will require vulnerability and courage, and perhaps most poignantly, it will require the risk of saying yes to the unfamiliar for a chance at the transformational. And that's their vision of welcome. that there's risk and discomfort in the unfamiliar, but it's also an opportunity for transformation. And that change and transformation in our lives and in the lives of others, that's the reward of welcome that's practiced in discomfort. And for us, I know it's difficult to share, you know, a physical meal with people in our socially distanced world right now. And I know many of us have reached technology and Zoom fatigue, but maybe this week, you know, consider reflecting on creative ways that we can either facilitate or host or even share brave space with people in our attempt to practice welcome in discomfort. And then we close in verse 42. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. So in this last verse, it's a continuation of who Jesus is inviting them to welcome. It's a progression from the prophet to the righteous person. And then in somewhat of a surprise ending to his listeners, it finishes with these little ones. And that phrase is used to describe the vulnerable. You know, the ones who have little standing in the communities that they're a part of. And this has been a consistent theme throughout Jesus' teachings and life, where he placed priority and focus on the ones who society deemed as little, less than, or unworthy. He uses this same metaphor later when he says that what you do for even the least of these, you've done it for me. We live in a culture and a world that attempts to portray strength and self-reliance as the highest value and measure of achievement and becoming. And welcome introduces a counter-narrative to that assumption, because welcome invites us to step into vulnerability and healthy interdependence. And so for us, welcome is an invitation to experience the mutuality of being with vulnerable people. You know, when we consider what authentic welcome is, it's not just one side extending or offering something, but it's about connecting and being with those who are welcomed. Mutuality and interdependence should be an integral part of welcome. You know, this past week, our family watched Just Mercy together, which is a movie based on the life of Bryan Stevenson. It's challenging and it's inspiring to see someone choose to dedicate their life to serving a marginalized group of people. And for him, it was death row inmates who had not had fair or proper legal representation and have had no options to fight the broken and oppressive system that put them in there in the first place. And many of those he worked with were falsely accused and sentenced. And at one point in the film, he's asked, you know, why he's choosing to use his Harvard law degree to work in Alabama, representing death row inmates who can't pay him. And he responds by telling a story that when he was a teenager, his grandfather was murdered at home during a robbery. And he kept waiting for someone to show up and help, but no one ever came. And he realized that outside of his community, no one cared, because to them, his grandfather was just another black man killed in the projects. And so he says that he knows what it's like to be in the shadows. And that's why he's doing this. And it's because he knows what it's like to be in the shadows that he's willing to enter the shadows to be with these death row inmates, to be with these people who are hidden and unseen and vulnerable. And it's through his interactions with these inmates over the years that Bryan Stevenson said that he learned from them what hope is and what it means and looks like to stay hopeful. That's the gift he received from these inmates who society says has nothing to offer. That's the mutuality of welcome and transformation that happens in the shadows with vulnerable people. And so my hope for us this week is that we'll consider and ask ourselves, you know, what's our invitation to practice welcome? What might welcome look like for us in a physically distanced world? And how can we still foster, develop, and carry a posture of welcome in vulnerable places with vulnerable people? And so let me close with this poem that was written by Mickey Scott Bay Jones called An Invitation to Brave Space. It's a poem that was written for and used by the People's Supper Movement. Together, we will create brave space, because there is no such thing as a safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars, and we have all caused wounds. In this space, we seek to turn down the volume of the outside world. We amplify voices that fight to be heard elsewhere. We call each other to more truth and love. We have the right to start somewhere and continue to grow. We have the responsibility to examine what we think we know. We will not be perfect. This space will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our brave space together, and we will work on it side by side. And so we ask all this in the love of the Father, the welcome of the Son, and the hospitality of the Spirit. Amen.